speech.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful rainy Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guest will be Wen Jieying. She is the founder and director of Local Roots New York, and I'm really excited to have her on in just a little bit to talk about Local Roots NYC and talk to you about what she's been up to. But before I do that, I want to share with you some things that are going on in and around the city, in the news, and of course share my weekly recipe for you with all of you. First off, if any of you have any questions during the show, just to remind you that you can always call in to ask a question to me or my guest. The number here is 888-874-4888. And also they have now added a feature that if you want to, if you're listening to this podcast after the live show, you can also call in and leave a message. Just say what show you're calling for. And the number for that is 862-800-6805. So all of you know, I'm sure, that you can download these podcasts. You can take the PRN app with you wherever you go, and that's always a great thing. But I wanted to share with all of you that I am one of NOFA New York's newest board members. NOFA, for those of you that do not know, stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And I was really proud to be asked to join the board and to be voted in this past weekend at their winter conference. And the winter conference was wonderful, really, really wonderful. It was so nice to see so many farmers and meet new farmers that I had not met before, to see all the purveyors that were there showing their great farming tools to make our jobs a little easier. Anyway, it was just a wonderful conference. Unfortunately, it was, it ended a little early for me because I needed to leave before the big snowstorm came, and many people also took off. So for some people, it was cut a little short, but it was still wonderful. We had our first board meeting with the new members, and that was really insightful, and there's a lot of good work ahead for NOFA New York, and their certification program moves forward. But I really encourage all of you who are my listeners who care so much about organics, if you're not a member of NOFA New York yet, or whatever state you're in, there's a Northeast Organic Farming Association, if you're in the Northeast, for your particular state, please join. And those that are not in the Northeast, find a local farmer association in your area, an organic farming association, and really help protect and support the organizations that are working towards keeping our organic standards in alignment with our belief system. The integrity of organics is constantly being threatened by big corporations that are joining the boards of our National Organic Program and the National Organic Standards Board, and we really need to, you know, stop this revolving door, stop the backseat drivers of corporate greed that seems to infiltrate its way into all these organic organizations that we have, because they see that there's profit there. They're seeing that people want this, and yet they're really weakening it. I mean, just last week I had a real hard time trying to find organic coconut milk without gar gum. It used to not have gar gum, and somewhere along the line when I stopped looking at the labels, they snuck it in there. So once you start looking at labels, you have to realize that just because you have loyalty to a certain brand, you can't ever stop looking at those labels, because the minute that that company is bought out by a big corporation, the ingredients change. So you really need to constantly look at labels. I felt like such an idiot when I realized that I missed that, and I do try to avoid that. So once you start looking at labels, you got to keep looking at labels, even if it's your favorite brand, you've been buying it forever. So lots of other great things in the news. Slow Food North Shore, which is the local slow food chapter that I chair here on Long Island, is back, and we will be having our first event of the year on March 3rd, and that's the Food and Film Feast. And it is a feast. We curate a full 6 to 8 course meal, pairing it with a short documentary video and a speaker that has to do with the topic of the film as well. So both the food and the speaker are paired to match the film that you watch. And it's an educational night. It's a fun night. It's a great food night. Our Slow Food members cook up the food along with I Eat Green. They all help with me while I cook it up. And predominantly it is vegan, vegetarian, although we do have a raw dairy farmer who's coming, and we'll be sampling some of his cheese. But, of course, I'll also be making some cashew cheese for those that don't know how good vegan cheese can be. Making your own cashew cheese is unbelievably delicious and nothing like most of the cheeses that you buy. Some other really great things going on that you want to know about. The Real Truth Health Conference is going on. It's a 10 days of free talks with over 35 of the world's top authors. And if you go to the schedule, go to the website of the Real Truth Health Conference, it's unbelievable that all these people are going to be, I don't know where you live, but I'm kind of close to the Hilton here in Melville, talking for free. And, of course, all the talks will be available in a podcast as well. But the thought to, you know, go down, you know, 20 minutes away and to listen to Vandana Shiva speak. She's going to be there February 2nd and 3rd. Vandana Shiva is also going to be doing an event with Deepak Chopra on February 5th at the restaurant ABCV. And that's a book launch, actually, for a book called Eating Tomorrow by Timothy Weiss. So they'll be leading a discussion there following the book launch. So anyway, there's just so many great speakers at the Real Truth Health Conference that I recommend, if you haven't signed up for that, that you sign up for it. They do ask for you to register, but it is free. They also offer, if you go in during the day, there's a vegan lunch. If you go at night, there's a vegan dinner. And everything is being sponsored by the Hippocrates Institute in Florida and another gentleman that I don't know his name. But anyway, it's a wonderful conference, and it's really so affordable. I recommend everybody checking that out. You know, this week I, you know, wrote about closing down the Williams pipeline, which is the pipeline that they're trying to build that will take fracked gas from the Marcellus Shale region in Pennsylvania through New Jersey out into New York Harbor. And, you know, if any of you caught Governor Cuomo's State of the State address, he talked about leading the way, being a green state, you know, supporting alternative energy, getting off of fossil fuels. We can only do that if you stop investing money in the infrastructure for fossil fuels and stop allowing these corporations that are going to just make profit at the possible expense, and when I say possible, likely expense, because the track record for the for Williams Transco, which is the Oklahoma-based company that is planning on building this pipeline, it's a horrible track record. They have a very poor safety record. Most pipelines do leak. I mean, if you look historically into that. So the chances are it will leak. It will be underneath New York Harbor within just a couple miles of Staten Island. And it's going to kill the marine life that lives there. It's going to endanger all New Yorkers who live near the area. It's just bad. And then, of course, there's, you know, pipelines being built up by Albany and through Connecticut. We just need to stop them all. It's just, and the gas that they're piping through that is not even for our use. Most of it is for export, for these companies just to make profit off of gas and oil that they've extracted from our land. So anyway, we really need to put an end to it. So please sign the petition, call Governor Cuomo, and anytime you see this in the news, any pipeline, anything that is supporting the fossil fuel industry, please put your name to it and oppose it. I'll tell you more about some other things that you can do in a positive take action thing. But I first want to just also discuss that during this shutdown, for those of you who don't know, the Food and Drug Administration is one of the agencies that's been affected by this shutdown, and 41% of their 17,000 employees. That's 41%. That's almost half of their employees are furloughed. So you can imagine what that's doing to inspections. They've basically halted all inspections of domestic food, although with so many people getting upset about this, they did bring back some people to inspect the items that they consider more risky, like seafood and dairy. But most of these workers that are furloughed, the ones that they have brought back, they're bringing back, of course, without pay. So they're being forced to work without any pay. But, you know, the other foods that are getting passed by without inspection, you know, honestly, they don't do a good job to start with, even when the whole Food and Drug Administration is together. So with them furloughed and with them pressured for without enough people, you can imagine what's happening. And then for the imported foods, you know, those people are still inspecting imported foods supposedly, but because they're working with a smaller pool of people, everything's backlogged. So I'm hearing that, you know, food is rotting at the ports, and by the time they get into the stores, it's not as fresh. So anyway, be wary anytime, and I'd say be wary of any organics or a food that's coming from another country. The inspections there, you just have a hard time trusting. We have a hard time trusting the ones that are here. So anyway, just be wary of that. So some events I just want to tell you about that you don't want to miss. Tonight, there's actually a training course in civil disobedience, and that's being sponsored by the Extinction Rebellion NYC. And this is an organization that started out of the UK. They've made some real headway in pushing legislation to support the infrastructure towards alternative energies and to get off of fossil fuels. So they're really trying to, you know, put their bodies down in the street if they need to. So if you're interested in really taking this to the next level and really fighting climate change, take a look at Extinction Rebellion NYC. They have a great Facebook page. Tonight there's a training in civil disobedience, and this Saturday, the 26th, there is an event in the city by Central Park to really, you know, put your bodies on the line if need be to protest. So check that out. As I mentioned before, the Real Truth Health Conference is 10 days from January 25th through February 3rd. Do go to their website. Do check out the schedule. Really, some amazing people will be there. One of the things that they will be talking about, there will be someone talking about the exposure we all have to radiation. And last week I talked about the documentary film I saw called Generation Zapped. Well, they'll be showing that again on February 11th in Huntington Town Hall, but they're also screening it around the country. So check out Generation Zapped and look for a screening near you if you're interested in learning more about the 5G network that they're putting up around our area and all the radiation that we're exposed to and ways that you can protect yourself. I mean, we're not going to go back. I know, you know, the days of cell phones are here. I would be really hard-pressed to give up my cell phone, too. But how can you prevent yourself from exposure to high levels of radiation? Like, you do not want to put your cell phone inside your bra. You do not want to hold the cell phone right up to your ear. You want to avoid certain things. And so check out the movie Generation Zapped, and you'll learn a lot about that. Also, there's a divestment lobby day up in Albany. That's a month away on Wednesday, February 27th, but save the date. Divest New York is the organizing organization, and it's a huge lobby day that's going to be taking place up in Albany. I do plan on going. If anyone's driving from the Long Island area or needs a ride, shoot me an email, and I'd be happy to give somebody a ride. But know that there are phone numbers on my website of legislators you can call to urge them to support the Fossil Fuel Divestment Act, which is going through the state assembly. So I now want to share with you my recipe so that I can invite my guest on. This week I made camellia pinto beans with Swiss chard and vegan chorizo. Now, the camellia beans, they're actually an arc of taste, which is a part of the Slow Food Organization where they highlight different foods that are in risk of not being used, and therefore if they're not used and they're not eaten, they disappear. So they're trying to bring back this type of pinto beans called the Camellia, C-A-M-E-L-L-I-A, pinto beans. So I made this recipe with Swiss chard, and I used a vegan chorizo, which is like a vegan sausage, and I just happened to have it in the house. I don't buy those products often, so it was kind of like here for a while, and I need to figure out something to do with it, and I just wanted to try it. So I put it in these beans, and it came out really great. So I used 1 pound of those pinto beans, 3 bay leaves. One bay leaf might be enough if yours are new, but my bay leaves have been around for quite a while, so I put 3 in. 4 cloves of garlic, 10 cups of water, 1 organic onion, 1 tablespoon chopped garlic, 1 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon pepper, 2 bunches of Swiss chard, and I, you know, roll that up and cut that into thin threads. 2 of the vegan chorizos, I cut that in half down lengthwise, and then I cut it into 1-inch piece chunks. 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1 teaspoon of smoked paprika, and 1 teaspoon of sweet paprika, and some olive oil for the sautéing. So first I rinsed and drained the pinto beans, put them in a large heavy pot with the 10 cups of water, the bay leaves, and the cloves of garlic, and brought that to a boil. And then I cooked that in a low boil for about 10 minutes. Then I lowered the temperature and simmered it for 1.5 hours. And I was amazed by how soft these beans were without soaking them overnight first. And, you know, I checked the recipe. I checked, you know, the package of the beans. They did not talk about soaking, and usually I soak my beans. But these I didn't, and they were really beautifully textured after 1.5 hours of simmering. So then in that same pot, so I took the beans out, actually, and I drained them, and I reserved some of the water so that I could put that water back into the beans to make it a little thinner as I was cooking it. So then in the same pot, I sautéed the onions for about 5 minutes. Then I add the vegan sausage and the garlic, some more garlic, and cook that up. That was the chopped garlic that I added. And cooked that for 5 minutes. Then I added the Swiss chard and cooked for another few minutes until the Swiss chard cooked down, was wilted. Then I put the beans back into the pot along with some salt and pepper to taste, some cumin and the paprikas. And I simmered that for 10 minutes, stirring regularly. And then I added some of the reserved water just to get the consistency I wanted. I didn't want it to be so thick. I wanted it to be a little creamier. And then you can adjust the spices to your taste. You know, some people like a little more salt, a little more cumin. If you want a little more smoky flavor, you can add a little bit more of the smoked paprika. But that's it. And you can serve it with some rice, or you can serve it with some rice noodles. But it was just delicious. The beans, I have to tell you, were some of the best I've ever had. So do look for those type of beans, the Camellia pinto beans, and you will find out more about them on the Slow Food website. Okay, so now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you, my guest this week is Wen J. Ying. She's the founder and director of Local Roots NYC. And Local Roots is an alternative to the typical CSA model in that they go a step further and they offer more local food products as well as the raw veggies. And they also have found creative ways to get people to be able to afford it so that you don't have to come up with all the money at once. And I'm going to let Wen J. tell us more about that. Wen J., are you with me? Good. Thank you so much for joining me today. That's good. That's good. And I can hear you fine. So everyone know you can hear people fine without holding it to your ear, because that's really, really a no-no. So tell us a little bit about Local Roots. What was your inspiration for starting it? Where did your passion for healthy local vegetables come from? Yes, it is.
I first got my start in local food by doing AmeriCorps for 1 year at a food justice nonprofit called Just Food. And it's there where I became acquainted with CSAs. I built resources for their members. I absolutely fell in love with connecting people over food and also supporting local farmers. Before that, I had no experience in food. I did not go to food studies. I barely ate vegetables. I was pretty disconnected from that whole world. Mm-hmm. But it was like an instant love relationship with food. And then after AmeriCorps, that's 1 year of service, I worked for a fruit farm, and I set up a fruit-only CSA with them in New York City. And they had a bad growing season, and a lot of people, like, lost their jobs within the organization. I remember talking to my mom on the phone in Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, just crying on the phone because I really liked my job there. And I just didn't know what to do now with my life. And she suggested I start my own business, which I thought was crazy because I have no business background. I was, I think, 24 at the time. Like, who's going to trust a 24-year-old? But she suggested that because I actually knew at that point exactly what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to make CSAs more accessible and more convenient for not just the members, but also for the farmers. Because at that point, I saw that CSAs were only supporting vegetable farmers, all these different farms are working so hard to support themselves. So why shouldn't a livestock farmer or a dairy farmer or a fruit farmer get the same kind of support that a vegetable farmer does? So I wanted to kind of make that easier for farms. And also for the members in New York City, it is a beautiful thing that CSAs are managed by volunteers. But the more, like, New Yorkers just get busier and busier, right? So to me, it felt like to have something really, a movement grow and to really support the CSA movement, I wanted to be the one to manage all those logistics so that it did not have to rely on volunteers. And I also wanted to make it, a one-stop shop, for the consumer, so that they can make that time in their week where they pick up their CSA share, their veggies, but they're also able to get their fruit and their bread and their eggs, and they have that same connection with the farmer. So essentially, because this job I had in mind did not exist anywhere in the world, again, this is 2011, this is before local food really, became super popular. I have a hard time doing things I'm not passionate about. So I just decided to start a business. And then I think was up and running after like 2 months of my business idea. Because I essentially needed a way to support this dream and passion and value-based concept, so I decided to make a business around it. That's kind of how it started.
And do you have, in your mission statement, when you say you support farmers, are you supporting local farmers that are just organic, and I don't mean organic like they have to have certification. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about organic in that those are the practices they follow. Because I'm a radical from way back when. I don't think someone needs to give money to the government to say they're certified. But I do care, in the quality that's being grown, or, if I'm getting eggs, I want the eggs to be organic, so that they're not eating GMO'd grain. Do you take those things into consideration with the farmers that you work with?
Yes, we have super, super strict guidelines with the farmers that we bring on board as partners. So they are all sustainable, whether that means if they're a vegetable grower, they are organic. Actually, all of our farms except for a rooftop farm we work with are USDA certified. And if it's
certified organic.
Yes, certified organic, yeah. Uh-huh. And then if it's eggs, for example, they are pasture-raised, they are eating non-GMO feed and super nutrient-diverse food, whether it's bugs and grass and that kind of stuff. Our two main guidelines are that you're within 2 hours of New York City and that you are using sustainable growing practices.
Oh, that's good to know. Great, because that's one thing that I have witnessed so much that, you know, everyone with good intentions, you know, setting up farmers markets, especially in the less affluent communities, the farmers markets very often are not organic farmers. And so, you know, we're getting vegetables to people who need to eat vegetables, and that's certainly better than them not eating vegetables. But, you know, I really want, especially with now with my membership into NOFA, or on the board of NOFA New York, you know, I just think it's so important that the vegetables be raised in a organic manner so that they're more nutritious and taste better and all the wonderful things that come along with that.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point because, you know, sometimes we'll get emails about price comparisons. They'll look at our prices and they'll say, like, you know, we can get something that's a little lower priced at the farmer's market. But I always have to remind people that just because someone's selling at a farmer's market does not mean they're growing organically, and that you really, that's why you need to ask questions, right? Like, you have to ask people, what are your growing practices? What do you care most about? Are you taking care of your soil? Are you taking care of your staff? Because you can't just assume things, right? You can't just assume that you're at the farmer's market and everything's organic. And to me, that is what really motivates me, is that there's so many things you can't really trust, right? And there's so much research you have to do as a consumer. And it's really hard.
You heard my talk about the labeling at the beginning. I mean, you know, I was buying Whole Foods organic coconut milk for a while because it was cheaper than some of the others, and it was organic coconut milk, and it was just pure organic coconut milk. Where somewhere along the line they stopped. I mean, it's still organic coconut milk, but now it also has guar gum in it, and it's like, I don't want guar gum. Why do I need guar gum in my coconut milk? And they put that in. They already had my loyalty in the sense that I wasn't looking anymore. You know, especially now that I have to wear glasses to see those small ingredients. You know, and so it's like in and out of my pocketbook to get the glasses on. You know, very often I know the brands I like and I buy them. And then when I get home and I saw I had to return all these things to Whole Foods. So, you know, I've heard people also at Whole Foods saying, well, it's more expensive, but, you know, yeah, that's because it's all healthy and it's like, or all organic. And that's not necessarily the truth. You know, you need to look. The majority of the vegetables at Whole Foods are not organic.
It is mostly never the truth.
Right.
Which is a really sad thing to say. But, like, similar to that, I mean, when you look at organic eggs, for example, these larger companies like Whole Foods, when they have their own private labeling of eggs that says, you know, it could be USDA organic or organic eggs, that only applies to the feed. It's organic feed, but you don't know what the feed is, and it also has nothing to do with how the hens are raised. So a lot of the time, these hens are still living these kind of like factory lifestyles where they actually don't have access outside. And,
right, although they have a door, so they still can say access to the outdoors, but they're so
quiet,
they can't walk there.
Right, they can see a door, but like not only is that stressful for the bird, but that also means that if your bird cannot go outside and eat in its natural, like, you know, be in a natural environment and eat things on the ground, their diets are not as diverse, which also means the nutrients that the humans get when you're eating these eggs are also not as diverse. So you're not getting as many nutrients out of your food as you think, because your people would just equate some labels into what they wanted to, what they're hoping it means. But again, like you're saying, like, you know, a lot of the work we do is not just a CSA, but we do so much research that people have started to, like, our logo is essentially now a stamp of approval because they can trust that we've done the research that they wish that they had more time to do, so that you don't have to trust marketing words anymore. You know, you can kind of just trust the fact that Local Roots has done all this work for you.
Yeah. You know, and that's so important. I tell people that all the time, that you have to find those organizations you can trust, because there's no way we can all do all the research that needs to happen to protect ourselves. So, you know, when it comes to, like, organic eggs, you know, for those that are listening to this show who are not in New York City and able to buy through Local Roots NYC, which would be lovely if you could, to know that you can go to either the Cornucopia Institute's website or the Environmental Working Group's website, EWG.org, and they have lists of things that they have already vetted for you. So they have, I forget which one it is, has the list on the eggs. So they have almost every farm of eggs listed, and you can see where your eggs fall because, as you just said, Wenjay, many, many eggs that have the organic label are far from organic. It's still a factory farm, and these chickens are still not outside pecking in the grass.
Yeah, that's incredible. I actually did not know about that research.
Check both of them out. They have lists for everything from eggs to dairy to sunscreen. In the summer, I always talk to everybody about sunscreen because, you know, our skin's our largest organ, and people are lathering this sunscreen over their children, and they have no idea what's in that sunscreen. So,
we actually just published a blog article on our website that breaks down the different labels and what they their guidelines, and we're trying to break down right now like eggs to the public. So if people want to check out our blog article, they should look at it. But also if you know reading is maybe too cumbersome, I don't know, just ask questions, right? Like go to your farmer's market and just ask them, how do you feed your hens? How much time do they go outside? How much time do they have inside? How much space do they have inside and outside? I always tell people, like, if you need to look at a label, pasture-raised is, to me, one of the most important things. So hopefully, like, you know, between all these different resources that you just shared, that people can maybe feel a little more confident in their buying choices.
Yeah, but like we just said, it can say pasture-raised.
Right.
It's not necessarily pasture-raised. They might have access to pasture, but they're not going out there. So you really want to know your farm, and that's why these other organizations that really do that research are so, so vital to know and have in your back pocket to be able to use, you know?
Exactly.
So just for those of my audience that might not be familiar with the typical CSA model, I want you to describe the difference between the typical CSA model and your CSA model. So if you could just kind of give a overview of what a normal one would look like versus yours, that would be helpful.
Sure. So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it is when people in a community will prepay for 6 months of food at all at one time, and then they go to one place in their neighborhood and pick up the food they ordered. So it comes directly from a farm, and you're subscribing to 6 months of vegetables. It's every week you would go maybe to a church or a synagogue or, you know, someplace in the community and pick it up. It's volunteer run, so meaning that when you're going to pick up your food, there's volunteers that are check you in. So the normal season for CSAs in the Northeast, at least, is between June and November. And then there's a break until the next year, the next June to November season.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I'd also say that CSAs are tailored more for a household of, like, 4 or 5 people, or even more than that. And the way that the local roots CSA, or what we're calling the farm share, the model works in the sense that it's tailored really for New Yorkers in the sense that we break down the financial commitment. So instead of prepaying for 6 months of food, we are having our members prepay for 3 months at a time. So this way it's a little easier on the wallet, and it also makes it so people who are new to the CSA concept can feel more comfortable trying it out because it's less of a commitment to them. People in New York also travel all the time. So this makes it, if they're traveling in the summertime, they can still rejoin local roots in the fall. And our seasons go all year round. So instead of just taking a break, how the normal CSA is, there's no CSA season in the winter and spring. For local roots, we go all year round so that you can get your local fresh produce all year round. It's a part of your lifestyle. And like I mentioned, the traditional CSA model is primarily vegetables. We are a one-stop shop. We have veggies, meat, eggs, cheese, you name it, as long as it's from a local producer. We will have it as an option for you to subscribe to. We we do not rely on the volunteers. People will definitely contribute their talents when they want to, but we have our own staff that manages everything, and we offer recipe cards every single week. We do a lot of tips on, you know, sustainable cooking or meal prep, and our CSAs, our markets, are at bars and cafes and offices because we want it to be a social and fun experience. I think so often, in general, grocery shopping feels like an errand, but the CSA model is beautiful, and the fact that you can talk to your neighbor while you're picking up your food, which is really great. I'd say those are the main differences, and also the fact that we are really tailoring our options for households of like 1 to 3 or 1 to 4. We know that New Yorkers, one, we will always go out to eat. There's so many restaurants. So we know that people are cooking less in New York, and our fridges are smaller. So we're offering people, like, the amount of food we give is less than the traditional CSA model because we know that there's not enough room in the fridge to really store a lot of food.
Mm-hmm. So, if you're prepaying, how, and you have all these different options, how does someone prepay if, you know, if they want meat or eggs? They have to say what they want for the whole 3 months. Like, so, you know, every week I want 1 pound of cheese, 1 pound of meat, 1 dozen eggs, that type of thing. You have to pre-say all those things?
No, you're not pre-selecting specific items. You're just pre-selecting categories. So you're saying, I want your meat share. And our meat share is a rotation of 2 pounds of meat every delivery. So we are curating what people get every delivery, but you're just selecting the category. And it's really beautiful in that sense because it takes a lot of decision-making out of grocery shopping, and we're working with the farmers to know what is best at that time. And we're also thinking about, like, what makes a complete meal. So say we know that we're going to be getting kale in the vegetable share, if that's one of the items. We're thinking, oh, okay, like, what would kale be really good with in terms of a cut of meat? So we have, like, a lot of curation behind the options we offer, and all you have to do is choose the kind of categories of food that best fit your cooking lifestyle.
Uh-huh. And what about, can you get a half share of the meat? Let's say you think 2 pounds a week is too much, but you'd like 1 pound a week. Can you do that?
So you can actually order things a la carte off our website. So if you do say, hey, like, this seems like too much for me, I don't eat that often, I don't eat meat that often, you can actually select things like, I want this kind of steak a la carte delivered one time, or I love a whole chicken for one delivery.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Yeah, that definitely makes it much easier. And how many sites do you drop off at? Because I heard you also deliver directly to the home, right? If somebody
mm-hmm.
doesn't want to go and pick up?
Yeah, so we have 20 pickup points throughout Brooklyn and Manhattan, and we do home delivery to Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens.
Wow, that's amazing. Sounds great. Let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk about you know, what you are planning on for the future, because I know you have a lot of things that you're looking forward to. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Wen J. Ying, founder and director of Local Roots NYC. Be right back.
Light Treason News, hosted by Allison Kilkinney, interviews fascinating people and wild characters in this political comedy podcast. So tune in Thursdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network for pop culture.
Sacha Baron Cohen dresses up as different characters and interviews people. And sometimes they're just like average Americans, and sometimes they're really, really famous politicians and personalities.
Politics.
But we know this song and dance, right? It was called Triangulation during the Clinton years.
Yeah, and it was how we ended up destroying a bunch of the social safety net.
And a sprinkling of treason.
Light Treason News on the Progressive Radio Network.
You're tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best in alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I am the host of The Love Code. As a naturopathic doctor, psychotherapist, author, lecturer, and lifelong spiritual seeker, The Love Code is an opportunity to expand inspiration, transformation, and rejuvenation in your life. Every Saturday morning, I have inspiring conversations with people who are living extraordinary lives, dedicated to service, dedicated to healing, and dedicated to transforming consciousness on this planet. If you're ready for your dose of inspiration, transformation, and rejuvenation, then I invite you to join me every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on The Love Code. See you there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Wen Jie Ying. She's the founder and director of Local Roots NYC, which is an alternative to your typical CSA model. And we were just talking about how her program works. Wen Jie, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So the Chinese New Year's coming up. And as a Chinese American, can you talk a little bit about how your cultural background has intertwined with being an entrepreneur and how it affects your food choices and your business sense?
One exciting thing that we're actually doing right now in Local Roots is working with our farmers to crop plan for next year. And we always tell our farmers that we want them to grow varieties that are super flavorful based on their soil and their farm. And also things that, like, new and interesting crops that they're really excited about trying. And I'm super excited that one of our farmers is going to be growing some Chinese leafy greens for next year. Mm-hmm. And that was not me pushing it on him. He actually suggested it. And so for me personally, I'm excited to share those varieties with our community. And also be able to share, like, maybe recipes that my mom has for those dishes, for those vegetables. So this is a personal excitement with Chinese food. But I say that I've really learned a lot about myself as a Chinese American and also my culture through having a business and also working with food. So just in terms of being an entrepreneur, you know, I was raised by both my parents came here around the 70s, you know, to find that American dream, and they worked their ass off, and they have retired in a place where, you know, I think they're proud of the work that they did, and I learned a lot from their work ethic. I think everything I learned from them in terms of work ethic is the only reason I'd say that I have had a business for seven years at this point, because as an entrepreneur of a small business, you are always working and you need to find joy in the work you do. And also just that constant idea that working hard is a form of survival. And it's also just this motivation that you're creating something good and creating something better in this world that really keeps me motivated. And also in the same light that I've learned a lot from them, but then also I've learned a lot about myself that, you know, my parents really wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer. And I've always wanted to make them proud of me. And even though I did not choose a profession that they had hoped I would. And for the first, I'd say, like, 5 years of business, I didn't realize, but I was working so hard in hopes that they would be happy of the choices I'd made and really proud of the work I did. And I think once my dad told me he was proud of me, which is maybe, like, admittedly, maybe the first time in my whole life that he had said that to me, it was a really strange feeling, because now I realize that I had to find a new fire to keep me motivated at work.
Right, backfired.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, it was a little scary. I was like, oh, my God, like, now I have to find a pure reason of not just making my parents proud, but, like, how do you keep going, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've definitely found that, you know, I've always been passionate about the work I do. But I've found, like, probably a little healthier way to stay working hard, to build local roots. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I'd say also, just, you know, I've been able to learn a lot about my own culture and my parents through food. You know, like, they're not people that open up about their personal lives much, but when I ask them about, like, oh, what foods did you eat as a kid? You know, what did you cook with your parents during Chinese New Year? That's the time that all these stories come out and they unfold, and I'm able to see what their life was like when they were growing up in China and then also growing up in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And I really love the way that food does that. You know, it is a true connector between people and our culture that is something so beautiful that it's a blessing for me to have food as such an important part of my life.
Mm-hmm. And is there a typical food that is reminiscent of the Chinese New Year?
Yeah, there's a lot of symbolic dishes in Chinese New Year. So there's tea eggs that you can make with eggs, and you kind of cook it for a long time in, like, a tea broth. There's also the soy sauce chicken, where you essentially just, like, cook a chicken in, like, a soy sauce / also, like, a tea broth also. Those are two of my favorite ones. Those are the ones that I perfected myself. But, you know, like, eating a whole fish is symbolic during the Chinese New Year. Eating dumplings is also a tradition. So Chinese New Year is great because it's an endless, endless feast, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've walked out through Chinatown during the Chinese New Year, and it's just, you know, food stalls galore, but, you know, a lot of it doesn't look so different than, you know, the feast, you know, down in Little Italy. So, you know, mm-hmm. and some of it does, but, you know, that's how our melting pot is. Sometimes things just start getting all intertwined.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about your winter share? I know you said your CSA goes year-round, and, you know, people don't think of within 2 hours of New York being able to grow so many vegetables. I mean, you certainly could import vegetables from California or Mexico, but what is grown here? Are people growing inside greenhouses? How are you offering the winter share, and what do the vegetables look like?
So our winter share is something that's really, really important to me, because I want local food and local eating to be a lifestyle, not just a seasonal habit. And the only way that can happen is if local food is still exciting in the winter and springtime, and not just, you know, piles and piles of potatoes. So we do crop planning with our farmers to tell them, hey, you know, we have a winter and spring season. Please make sure you're growing more in the fall and storing those root vegetables. And also, we're also looking for, we're looking for people that are growing in greenhouses so that we can have some tomatoes and leafy greens in these colder months. And also, we work with an aeroponic farm in New Jersey called Aero Farms. And through them, we're able to offer the members who purchase vegetables through us, they can get things like baby kale and arugula and salad mixes. So you're still getting your greens in there, and you're still feeling excited that there's new varieties coming every week. For example, this week we have burdock root, which is new to local.
That's
Ruth's.
Not from Arrow Farms, though, right? They're not. They don't do root vegetables, do they?
No. Burdock Root comes from upstate. Yeah.
Right.
But we.
I had the people on from Arrow Farms on my show a few weeks ago. And you know, really interesting model, and I'm very supportive of aeroponics and hydroponics, but that's different than organic. So do you differentiate for your customers so they know where each thing's coming from, so they know if something's hydroponic or aeroponic versus organic?
Yeah, so we, every week in our newsletter, we break down where each ingredient comes from, which farm. And on our website, we have a list of who is, like, their certification, if it's USDA organic or if they're growing naturally, or, you know, if it's pasture raised.
Mm-hmm. And then, so during the summer months, do you then switch from, like, Arrow Farms and then go to local farms for the greens so that you're getting organic versus hydroponic?
Exactly. So in the warmer months, we work with the Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm, which is a rooftop farm mm-hmm. in Brooklyn, which is, it's actually across the street from our office. So, you know, on average, people's food at the grocery store travels like 1,500 miles, and our salad greens actually will literally travel half a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Delivered across the street, which is great. So they are not USDA organic, but they do grow organically.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, I think the label is not the important thing if you know the integrity of what's being grown. So, mm-hmm. you know, things like Arrow Farms, as much as I have such respect for the operation and what they're doing, you know, what they feed the plants is proprietary. So they don't tell you exactly. So you don't really know, you know, is it chemical? Is it organic? Is it, you know, synthetic? What are these vegetables feeding on? Because, you know, depending on how the soil is, I know you know that because I've been on your website. You know, depending on how good the soil is, depends on how nutritious the vegetable is and how it tastes. And, you know, so many things mm-hmm. affect the actual end result vegetable.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we definitely visit the farm a couple times a year. And, I mean, all in that situation, all we can do is trust when we go visit the farms and we talk to them that they are telling us the truth. So that's kind of like where the trust comes in with those relationships we have with our farmers.
Right. And prior to starting your own business, you worked with the Good Work Institute. What is that?
So I was actually part of their fellowship, so I didn't work for them. But
okay.
The Good Work Institute is a new kind of business school that teaches businesses and actually nonprofits of how to be more regenerative. So how can you create a business model and how can you do work that gives back to the community? So mm-hmm. it's actually really affected the way I do work because I got to a point about 4 years into business where I felt really depressed about owning a business because I knew I needed to grow my business for survival. Mm-hmm. And I looked around at my competitors at the time and I saw what they were doing. They're all fundraising. They're all scaling really quickly. And there was just something inside me that I just really did not want to do that. It's not why I started my business. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I thought that because everyone else is doing this, I also had to do this to be competitive and to survive in this industry. Mm-hmm. And then I became a fellow of the Good Work Institute, and they really helped me redefine my values as a business. I was able to kind of like change the measures of success for myself and also realize that there is a lot of power in scaling really deeply and slowly within your company versus quickly and really wide. So it's definitely changed the way I do work, and it has made me still a very happy business owner. And I've been able to, like, really hold on to my values and morals with running a small business because part of the reason why I also wanted to start a business versus a nonprofit is that I think, you know, traditionally people view businesses as, you know, they're taking advantage of you and you can't really trust it. But I really think small businesses can change this world. And I want people to know that there are small businesses out there that you can trust and, you know, that they are value aligned with you.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about expanding your business and making it scalable, are you looking more towards keeping it still local and you expanding your model to, let's say, go on to Long Island or into New Jersey or Connecticut, or are you looking at the actual model, taking, you know, setting everybody up so they can take it anywhere and repackage it in another state?
That is a really good question that I think about pretty often. I think it goes both ways. So, one, growing local roots in the terms of the services we can offer our community right now in New York City, and also the world, in the fact that I want to grow our presence. I want to be more of a spokesperson for local food and farms, and we want to be doing education in a way that's really fun and approachable. So in terms of that, it means like having more cooking workshops, and it means doing more like video content to put the word out there mm-hmm. about like transparency issues, or like, you know, how do you meal prep, or how do you use all parts of your vegetable, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's like increasing the services we can offer. And in terms of expanding our locations, I would really like it if, you know, I completely, the reason why we grow slowly and have stayed hyper local is that no, like the local food scene here versus Philly versus Boston is completely different. And mm-hmm. if we're going to expand to a new city, it means finding someone who has a pretty similar personality to me and shares the same passions and values of local roots, that can maybe bring on a local roots to a different city. And then I would work closely with them to, you know, find the farmers we want to work with and set up the logistics that we've really become experts at.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great answer. And we're just about out of time. So, and before we run out, I want you to be able to share with everybody how they would contact you, your website, and where they can find out more information. So if they are local and they want to sign up, they can do that.
Great. Thank you also so much for having me on this. I love your newsletter, so it's a real honor
Thank
to be
you.
Here. So you can always join our Farm Share or slash our CSA all year round. It is localrootsnyc.com to order. And you can follow us on Instagram, where there's lots of pictures of recipe ideas and our farms and what our markets look like. That's at localrootsnyc. And we have a bunch of workshops coming up. We're planning one for Chinese New Year of a dumpling making party. So check us out on our website. And also, we actually have a new, we're featured in.
Go ahead, you can finish quick.
Okay. We're featured in a new Viceland TV show that's going to be airing on February 17th. So check out viceland.com. That is called Hustle.
Okay, send me all that information. I'll put it on my website as well. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And thank you, Wenjay, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye for now.